Welcome back to the Swamp, my friends, and welcome if you're new. Today we're going to be sharing some creepy and allegedly true Skinwalker horror stories sent in by viewers just like you. As always, if you have a story that you would like to share in a future episode, whether it's with a Skinwalker, a Bigfoot slapping your dad, or anything in between, be sure to submit your story at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. Be sure to hit that like button, subscribe if you're new, and turn on notifications so you don't miss a new episode, as I upload them multiple times a week on all things natural and supernatural. Now, without further ado, let us jump right into these Skinwalker stories, because I'm ready to start beating some skim wussy down. This took place probably in November of 2022. Before I get into it, you need to know it's been a running joke that my cat is a skimwalker because she mimics human speak, walks upright, and just has a vibe that she's far more intelligent than she should be. She's only 4 pounds and knows how good she has it for sure. It was before dawn. I was asleep, being kept up all night by a weird screaming in the fields outside of my yard. Honestly, I thought it was a fox or something at first, but it ended in a way that a deer call would. Like the elk in Skyrim. Everyone heard and reported it, but nobody had found and trapped any sort of animal that could be responsible. The theory was that one of my neighbors was illegally keeping foxes for the pet trade on her farm, but investigations proved she had all her animals legally and foxes were not among them. So, I am conked out when suddenly I hear my cat meowing and screaming outside my door, clawing to enter my room. Remember when I said that she can mimic speech? Her meows often sound like human words. It honestly kind of sounds like a child crying. I sighed and pulled a pillow over my head to drown it out some, as I knew damn well she had all the fresh food she could want. Plus, I just cleaned the litter box before going to bed. The clawing continued with that all-too-familiar fury and panic my cat contains. I swear you would think I abandoned her somewhere. When the clawing failed, she started making the I-am-gonna-puke sounds. It honestly sounds like a drunk person groaning. I swear, this cat makes every annoying sound she can to get what she wants. That got me up pretty quickly. If she's going to throw up, I knew she would do so in the center of the carpet where my parents were sure to step. I sat up in bed, blindly groping for a house coat and slippers, only to see that my cat was already in the room. I had not left my room all night, so I was pretty sure she was still out there. So how the hell did she get in my room? She looked at me momentarily and I saw both fury and terror in her eyes. I said her name in a whisper. Not even I could hear, and she squeaked at me, or maybe even whimpered. That's when the meows came again from outside my door. Louder, longer, meaner. I grabbed my now snarling cat and pulled her under the bed covers with me while silently praying to every god and goddess I knew. Then the meows changed from meows to the sound of some long-gone, very much beloved dog that I had a long time ago, but it was whimpering, complete with his claws clacking on the floor. That was the final straw for me. I rolled out of bed, onto the floor, and loudly said, "You are not welcome here. Leave now." My cat snarled again and threw herself at the door with everything she had. Some growls returned, but everything fell silent except for our front door slamming shut. I pulled on the house coat, opened my door, only to be met by my father in the kitchen. He asked me if I had slammed the door and then realized I couldn't have had if he had seen me exiting my room. My mom joined us and asked what happened, and we all said we didn't know. I told them my cat was with me because they always blamed her and me for everything that went wrong in the house. My dad was beyond furious. He had been woken up way earlier than needed. He stormed to my brother's room, figuring he'd been out late and came home drunk, but my brother was sound asleep. And a note left by my friend who brought him home was saying he was too drunk to walk himself in. On his bedside, he probably had been home since about 12:30 due to the note. However, the last line made my blood run cold. "I left your brother in his room and left right away. I couldn't find his keys to lock up behind me. I also let your cat into the house. I think you guys might have forgot that she was outside." After this event, I blessed our house several times, and thankfully, nothing seemingly has returned, but every time I hear my cat, I have to make sure she isn't already in the room with me before I go looking. Sitting on the western side of the Missouri River is Omaha, Nebraska, a large metropolis that has been Nebraska's largest city for many years. It has witnessed many historical events throughout its almost 170 years. Like many cities, Omaha had many ethnic neighborhoods where new immigrants settled down with people of their kind. A section of town known for its meatpacking plants, appropriately named South Omaha, became the home of many Eastern Europeans, Poles, Czechs, Germans, Lithuanians, Slavics, Croatians, and more all resided here. However, many of these slaughterhouses closed as years passed and the area changed forever. A few remain, but the days of massive feedlots are gone. Growing up here, I was always told stories about South Omaha and its past. Many old buildings remained to act as silent monuments to the old days and often mesmerized me in my youth. I wanted to see these old buildings, some old slaughterhouses, factories, even old breweries that Omaha was once famous for. One building stood out to me though. One of the old slaughterhouses lay close to the train tracks that cut South Omaha in half. This building was massive, with almost 5 stories. It was very long, about 3 complete football fields wide. Built of brick and steel, this old building was a testament to the people of this city. However, I heard it would soon be demolished and was instantly saddened by the news. Hearing about urban exploration over the internet always piqued my interest, but I was always too nervous about trespassing. Since this building was set to be demolished, I decided to go and see it before it became a parking lot. I set out in my truck on a fantastic fall evening to see this behemoth of a building. I brought my heavy LED mag light and dressed in light hiking gear to avoid looking conspicuous. The slaughterhouse lay near the train tracks in a more deserted area of South Omaha. Around it were other buildings adorned with the same red and white brick that this building also wore. Many tall grasses and empty lots surrounded the building, all the while a chain-link fence surrounded the entire complex that was the slaughterhouse. I was prepared for this and parked some distance away on a side street near a garage. Walking towards the building, I became aware of its immense size. It indeed was magnificent and occupied a mammoth amount of space. The fence did not feature a barbed wire top so that I could climb over. The minute I stepped onto the ground after the fence, I felt a strange sensation from inside me. Nervousness, fright, I guess both if I had to really give a guess. Whatever it was, it remained with me as I proceeded on. I approached a door with a window on the side of the building. Whatever logo or name had been affixed to it before had long worn off and the glass was covered in dirt and grime. I tried the handle and it would not budge. I felt the door loose and figured it could probably be opened with some force. I eventually got it open after bashing my shoulder into it, accidentally breaking the lock. Oh well, I thought. It was going to be torn down anyway. I entered the slaughterhouse and flicked on my flashlight. As I stepped into the pitch blackness, I was greeted with a large open room that featured lots of decrepit machinery undoubtedly used for meat processing. The walls and floor were tile, easy cleaning, shouldn't be too long to do that. Long conveyor belts were shaking and snaking through the room, strewn with dust and cobwebs. Control stations, desks, and more surrounded me. None of this, though, looked like it had been touched for many years. I made my way through the mess of machinery and dust until I reached a pair of double doors. I pushed them open slightly into another large room. But as I did, something changed. It suddenly became frigidly cold, which was odd because it was only 65 degrees out. So sure, it wasn't like hot, but it wasn't cold either. And there was no wind at all. It felt like winter had come into this room alone. I shivered but pressed on. The next room was what I presumed to be the killing floor. It had a significant main pathway for the cattle to move through, and then conveyor belts to carry them to the next station to be dressed. Now, living near the stockyards all my life, I have become used to the smells that emanate from this part of town. The smell that hit me as I browsed this room was on a different level though. It was not a familiar smell of cow poop or burnt meat, but of death, decay, and disease. It was otherworldly. I have read and heard about rotting smell lending itself to wendigos, skinwalkers, and the like, so I was on edge. I tried to convince myself that it was just a dead animal or something more reasonable. I continued to walk through the next room with an absolutely uneasy feeling. Suddenly, a sound like no other shook the room with great ferocity. It was the bellow of a bull. It did not sound normal, though. It sounded like a cry. This was incredibly loud, shrieking like it was about to charge. I looked around quickly to find the scream's source, but I couldn't find a damn thing. I continued to move through the room, finally reaching the other end. Bright, shiny tile lined this side of the room, with more conveyor belts, large plastic bins on wheels. As I closed in on these bins, I was in a state of absolute shock. These bins were full of bones. They were massive bones, obviously from cows. How could they still be here? This place has been out of operation for close to 40 years. The bones were still bloody and smelled fresh. I was about to start freaking out at this point, honestly. I looked down and saw the floor was covered in blood from these bins. I quickly stepped back and nearly slipped on the tile. As I did this, I noticed a light from one of the doors near my end. Two red eyes appeared in the dark, and I leaned closer to see what it was. Suddenly, another loud bellow rang through the room, and those eyes got closer. I could hear hooves on the tile floor. I sprinted from my spot, bolted through the door, and got to the other side of the room. Once through the door, I ran down a hall lined with shiny tile. I followed this hallway, hoping to find my way out. I expected the bull to find me, or maybe just leave me alone entirely, but I was still determined. I reached the end of the hallway and approached the doorway with rubber flaps across it like you would see at a butcher shop. I pressed through and turned to the right, but stopped dead. A faint red light bulb exposed a workstation with multiple men cleaning a cow. They wore long white smocks, helmets, goggles, and rubber boots. One was spraying down the cow, the other was cutting a part off, and the last was moving some bones to a bin. I couldn't believe my eyes. How is this possible? Did some meat packing still take place? That couldn't be possible, there's no way. As I stepped more into the room, I heard something unusual. They weren't speaking English. It sounded almost Eastern European, maybe Polish. It had to be. I remember my grandparents speaking Polish to me occasionally. With my grandfather being full-blooded Polish, I was still in awe what I was seeing. I needed to get by these guys to leave, so I started to move past them. I don't know how, but they heard me, and all turned to look. Everyone stopped what they were doing. Three bespectacled men stared at me with only the dim red light exposing them. I froze in my tracks and knew I was trespassing. One man shouted something in Polish to me and began moving my way. The others followed. I fled to the other door and sprinted as fast as possible down the hallway. I heard their footsteps behind me, but their gear must have slowed them down somewhat, because I outran them. Soon, I found an exterior door and bashed it open. I was on the other side of the slaughterhouse, but quickly found the road on the west end of the lot, leading me back to the truck. Eventually, I did feel safer outside, now that I could catch my breath, walk around, and hide. While doing so, I took one more glance towards the building. My legs froze at what I saw. I saw the three men looking at me through an open truck dock. They looked the same, except they had red, glowing eyes. I began to run now, losing my mind in fear. As I saw my truck up the road, another bull bellow echoed through the street and hurt my ears. How could this be happening? I hopped in my car and peeled out of there. Looking in my rearview mirror, I couldn't see anything, but I was forever shaking by what I found. Never again would I explore the abandoned buildings, especially where many animals were killed. What did those men want with me? What would I have done? What was that creature? I have no idea. After doing a bunch of research online, reading a bunch of stuff on Reddit, and even listening to shows like Swamp Dweller, I just kind of think it might have been some sort of skinwalker. I don't know.
Hey, Swamp.
It's me again, Midori. This happened a couple of nights ago. So unlike some of the other things I have sent you, the details, at least those that I know, are still fresh in my mind. So, for some context, this happened at a park called Stolsoft Park. The whole thing is inside of my city. I would say it is maybe a square mile in total area. Sorry, I'm not too familiar with acres. It is mostly forest, with a playground facing the street on the northern end. The playground, along with the north and south entrances, are elevated, hill streets, so the forest gradually goes downward, meeting in a valley in the center. The playground is bordered by a forest on two sides. The swing set, where I was, is maybe 10 feet away from the fence separating one side of the playground from the forest. I'm sorry if that is confusing. I should say I usually go swing there anytime between 9 at night and midnight, mainly because I like being the only person in the park. I am not some curmudgeon who does not like kids or anything, I just prefer less crowded places in general. So, on this night, I believe it was around 11-something, when I hear shuffling behind the fence. This is not unusual at all, and I don't react in any way. Maybe 5 minutes later, I heard it again, and it sounded like something approximately human-sized. My first thought was a mountain lion. Despite the park posting signs warning of mountain lion activity, I have never actually seen one here. They do not worry me anyway, because a mountain lion will not usually attack or even really care about a human if you don't do something stupid like mess with their young. I have encountered them elsewhere. They generally mind their own business. My next thought was a creeper, and I mentally prepared to jump off and run to my car. At this point, I was looking at the fence. On that night, the moon was not shining per se, but it was casting its glow, giving minimal visibility. At 10 feet away, however, I would at least be able to see movement, especially of this being's assumed size. As I was mulling it over in my head, I heard not exactly what you could call a growl, but almost a moaning, I guess. It lasted about 5 seconds. Then I heard something moving away. The weird thing was, the movement came from quite a ways off, in the same direction, and the vocalization came from right at the fence, 10 feet away from me. Now at this point, the sensible thing to do would be to just leave, but having just happened, I was dumbfounded and just continued swinging for another 30 seconds or so. And then, of course, it got more strange. As I was swinging, I saw a flashlight in the distance near where the playground hits the streets. This is maybe 60 or 70 feet from me. With obstacles such as play structures and other things in the way, my first thought that it was a police officer or something of the sort. The playground technically is closed, and they all are because of the corona situation. But I've swung at parks after they've been closed for years, and if the police even care about things like that, they've never even bothered me. The guy came a bit closer, but he is moving at an angle towards me in the general sense, but moving at an angle. As in, if you envision the area as a clock with me at 6, he started at 12, and he is moving towards 7. Sorry, that is the only way I can really describe it. 10 feet from the swing set in the opposite direction of the fence, there's a 20-foot by 20-foot metal overhang with one of those fishnet pattern tables for picnics. I hopped off the swing and crouched behind it. In the day, this would be a completely useless hiding place. But at night, a person hiding behind it would just look like a part of a mass of shadow. I watched as it approached, and while I could not make out any details or colors, I could see that he was dressed almost like a hunter from the show Supernatural. He looked to be wearing baggy pants, a vest and a hat, the most common kind of hat with a duckbill on the front, the kind they sell at Lids. There looked to be things strapped on his arms and legs. Mind you, visibility was unbelievably bad, and I may have mistaken many of these details. He was carrying a flashlight, aimed at the ground in front of him. On his opposite hand, it looked like he had some sort of stick, like a gymnastics baton or something. All I know was the general shape, It occurred to me that if this guy fancied himself a hunter, then a pale girl swinging at midnight is probably the worst thing you can be. Either way, this situation now seemed potentially dangerous. If this person came close, I decided to run for the far fence, leading into the forest. Note that between me and my car, despite the small size of the forest, finding a person hiding in it would be impossible at night. Even with a flashlight, I am completely familiar with the forest. I am currently 27, and I have been coming here since I was 7 or 8 years old. Even in complete darkness, I could navigate it well enough to hide if I had to. As I crouched down, the person stopped briefly, then continued down into the forest entrance. That is basically the ending of our encounter. I waited for a few minutes, and then I tried to see if I could still see it. I am not sure if the two events were related at all. As far as the noise I heard, I know what mountain lions sound like. The only other fauna in the park are deer, squirrels, and insects. I honestly do not know if this was a skinwalker or anything like that. All I heard was the sound. There was no smell, and I did not get necessarily a terrible feeling from that person with the flashlight, even though they were dressed weird. Also, I don't think this forest would be big enough to house something like that, but maybe it could be just big enough for something to stop by for a few days. We do have a good-sized forest farther up in the mountains, not too far away, called Hubbard Park. You probably have to travel about 20 minutes through the suburbs to get there, but I'm not sure that it would be impossible for a skinwalker to bounce between these two locations. Do you guys think I saw a skinwalker? Do you guys think I possibly saw somebody hunting a skinwalker? I don't know.
Hello, my name is Heron, and I am a BBC Earth Nat Geo photographer and cinematographer for various documentaries, including Ice on Fire for HBO and Leonardo DiCaprio. A few years ago, something extraordinary happened to my shooting partner Gavin Heffernan and me at Vermilion Cliffs in Arizona. We had privately told the story to friends, but didn't figure making it public would make much sense until a friend of mine sent one of your videos about Skinwalker Ranch, which echoed almost similar things that happened to us. Gavin and I have specialized in night sky photography and have covered all 50 American states and Canadian provinces, spending full nights in most remote places. However, of over 1,000 of those nights, we spent shooting in. However, after spending thousands of nights out there shooting, we have never had anything like this happen. We made our way to White Pocket inside of Vermilion Cliffs, a fantastic collection of swirling white lithified sandstone. We decided to spend a night there shooting time lapses for a BBC Earth short film, and were the only ones there that night. We set up our 6 cameras and let them roll, and decided to get some sleep. We set a timer for 1 a.m. to wake up and move our cameras to different places so that we could shoot another set of shots. When I turned, I saw lights that initially looked like headlights but made no sense as they were in the direction of the park, where there were neither roads or trails. I pointed it out to Gavin, and we looked at it for quite some time. The more it appeared that it wasn't headlights, but possibly a headlamp of a hiker. However, there were no trails in that area, and we figured perhaps a hiker got lost and was wandering around towards us, as they may have spotted us with their headlamps. We decided to stick around and wait, as we were worried it might be someone who might take our cameras. We looked, and the light was getting closer. And when it got close enough that it was bright enough to reflect the white rocks at some point, but then it suddenly stopped. We sat there and waited in nothing. A couple of minutes later, the lights were back but much further away, and there was no way a hiker could have backtracked a few miles in a matter of 5 minutes. That disturbed us enough that we didn't return to our tents but stayed there to sleep next to the camera. This was a bizarre event, but we would have shrugged it off if something hadn't happened the following night. We drove to another park and hiked into a famous rock structure area called The Wave. Only about 20 people are allowed in a day via a permit. So we figured if we stayed overnight, 3 miles away from the parking lot, we wouldn't get any lights flashing around from cars or hikers. We could shoot the night sky videos there. It's a highly dark area at night. You can barely see your hand in front of your face. We did the same as the previous night, set up cameras and slept with the alarm set to 1 a.m. Unlike White Pocket, The Wave is situated amongst canyons that are highly echoey, and you can very clearly hear even the smallest of rocks roll half a mile away. Footsteps or any other sounds are easily heard. When we woke up, we returned to where we had left our cameras and set up new shots. However, when I went back to the spot I had left one of the cameras, it was missing. We left it there in the dark with nobody around. I frantically looked for it all around and nothing. I suspected I may have forgotten where I exactly put it, but I was fairly certain that it was there. I went to Gavin and asked him if he recalled where I put it, and he said he was sure it was where I was. We searched for it more, covering the whole area. Then we stood there, quiet, trying to see if we could hear the sound of a camera shutter clicking somewhere in the dark, but there was nothing. We agreed to go back to sleep and look for it in the morning when suddenly a loud thud reverberated through the canyon. We pointed our lights and walked in the direction of the sound. It was my camera, fallen over. There was no wind, no sounds of animals we would have easily heard, and no people. The camera was still clicking, taking shots, something we also would have heard when we were sitting there earlier listening for sound. We were beside ourselves as to how this could have happened because we set up our tripod legs wide to anticipate a possible bump of the camera by just about anything. But in this case, the camera would have had to been pushed over or dropped by something. I remember Gavin turning to me and saying, "I'm an atheist, but this one's making me wonder." Following morning, I dropped Gavin back at his car. He went toward Los Angeles and I went to the city of Page, Arizona, where I planned to do a night of shooting in the Waterholes Canyon. That's just underneath State Highway 89 and about 5 miles south of the town. Tried to put last night's event in the back of my head as I had to shoot alone this night. I was still in the Vermilion Cliffs area, but this was just outside the park and I was close to the town, so unlike the last two nights in a completely remote location, this was underneath a highly utilized bridge of a busy state road. I parked and went into the canyon to scout things out in daylight. I wanted to grab a shot of the bridge from inside the canyon, looking up at the night sky above it. As I made my way down into the canyon, hiking down a trail, I started to smell something strange. The closer I got to the canyon area underneath the bridge, the more I smelled it. When I got there, I spotted next to the bridge support structures what appeared to be a dead dog. I got closer, and it was clear the smell was coming from there. I then realized it wasn't a dog, but a coyote, and it was lying. Not as it fell from above, but as if someone had set it down. However, the disturbing part was that the coyote was missing its bottom jaw and its tongue, and it was sliced off, like it was missing. Not ripped off, but sliced off, with precision. I left and never went back again. I didn't think about this much until I watched your episode about Skinwalker Ranch, and now it's really making me think. I experienced what I can only imagine is an otherworldly occurrence when I moved to the Sierra Nevadas about 4 years ago. I'd been living in the South Lake of Tahoe, California area for many years and spent a decent amount of time in the outdoors, hiking, camping, and generally enjoying the beautiful place I was lucky enough to call home. Now, I don't get scared quickly. I'm used to being by myself and I carry weapons everywhere I go. Being a 5'2 and 110-pound female, I go out of my way to be sure I can protect myself. Many people in the outdoor community told me about being careful on the trails in the forest. I usually do these things alone, save for my trustworthy, though somewhat cowardly dog. But I had never felt as uncomfortable, confused, and downright afraid as I did in my apartment one night, when I finally relocated away from Tahoe to Reno, Nevada. I had moved to Reno to escape the isolation of living in Lake Tahoe, and though it is only about 60 miles away, it felt like a whole different world. Now, the city itself isn't necessarily huge, and I was living in the north end of town, surrounded by high desert foothills and somewhat sparsely populated compared to more of the urban city center. Still, I never felt like I was out in the boonies or anything. I lived alone with my pup, and we liked our little apartment. So to set the scene here, it was early fall and the sun was beginning to develop at a much earlier time of day, which was exemplified by the fact that the city sits in a valley, so sunset seems to approach much faster than in other places in northern Nevada. My apartment sat just above street level with a window in the kitchen next to my stacked washer and dryer that looked out into an alley, maybe about 10 feet above the small street beside the small fourplex building. It was dark outside, and I was alone with my dog doing laundry. My apartment layout was an open concept, and the living room slash kitchen area was separated by a wall that had a vast space cut out into it so you could walk through and see each other. With the washer and dryer tucked around, and the aforementioned window to the left of that, with the openness of the space, the darkness outside, and the number of overall windows the apartment had, it almost felt like you were in a spotlight. If it was dark out and I had the lights on, it looked like I was living in a fishbowl or a terrarium. Anyone or anything could see right in. I made it a point to permanently close my blinds, save for the small window looking out to the alley. I didn't mind keeping those blinds open because I liked the fresh air, and someone would need a ladder to reach me if they had been determined enough. As I was removing the clothing from the dryer and turning to plop it on my couch to begin folding, I realized my dog was acting incredibly strange. He didn't want to cross the line, so to speak, from my living room to the kitchen, marked by a change from the carpet to tile. Though it was only a few steps, he seemed incredibly hesitant and began whining and burping out small, concerned woofs. At first, I just thought he was anxious. For whatever reason, he is known to be a bit of a weenie, but then out of nowhere, I sensed this immense and insurmountable feeling of dread and displacement. I turned my back to the washer-dryer and small alley facing window. My dog sat facing me, almost looking past me, and his apparent anxiety and frustration began to build as I was asking him what was wrong. He started barking a whole alarm bark at this point. And as soon as he did, the sense that someone or something was observing me took over me and caused my blood to run cold. My logical response was someone was just watching me through the window. The only window that has open blinds. And the only window that anyone could see me through. So in one fell swoop, I reached for the overhead drawstring for the light and turned it off and faced the window, confronting whoever or whatever was intruding on my life. As soon as the light clicked off and the room was dark, I saw what I could only describe as a perfectly round light about the size of a small cantaloupe directly across from me on the other side of the window. It didn't glow like a lamp or a light, though. Its edges were perfect, and it didn't hover or vibrate or even move. At this point, I was too stunned to move, and my fight or flight response had engaged so quickly that I had no time to recognize or rationalize what I was seeing. I was looking at this thing, and it was looking back. I felt cold and confused. My hair was standing on end. My heart was racing. My dog had gone into complete freakout mode and was jumping and barking and generally causing a stir in the living room, as he could see all of this as well. The light seemed to now realize that I could see it, and it looked as if it backed away or at least grew more diminutive in size. It had moved to the right of the window now. It flickered twice and then disappeared. It didn't buzz away or fly away, and it didn't zoom out of vision. It was visible, not visible, and then just gone. As soon as I realized the light was not there anymore, I opened the window and poked my head out to see what was going on. Maybe someone was up at my window with a flashlight. Perhaps someone in the neighboring buildings had seen something and would be checking for themselves to try and solve this odd mystery. Nothing. Not a soul. And what felt like deafening quiet was all I heard. I closed the window. As soon as I shut the window, I hear a solid 3 knocks on the larger window out front by the living room. As I mentioned before, those blinds were closed, and though from the outside looking in it's entirely clear, someone was home because the lights were on in that room. No one could know it was me alone in my apartment, right? I wasn't expecting anyone over, and it was too late for solicitors. No one had any reason to be at my house then, and I was not going to open that door. My dog had rushed to the kitchen as soon as the light outside the window had disappeared, and then he was in what I can only describe full-on defense mode. Now my dog is an absolute wuss. I've seen him run from cats and get spooked by bags blowing in the street, and he generally stays by my side on hikes while we're camping, because normally, he expects me to protect him. This pup seemed ready for war though. Hackles up, eyes alert, growling at the front window now. I stepped into the living room, grabbed my gun with one hand, and keys with the other, and slinked back into the kitchen, and out the back door to where my car was parked. I threw my dog in, started it up, and raced off to a restaurant across town where I ordered to-go food and ate in the front of my Subaru. We car camped in a Walmart parking lot that night. I returned to the apartment the following day, my laundry still on the couch with no apparent signs of anyone trying to enter the place. Everything seemed normal. I never experienced any disruption in that place ever again for the year and a half that I lived there afterward. I have no idea, to this day, what I experienced. It wasn't until I shared the story with some friends that I heard that knocking and the sense of being watched was somewhat common of a phenomenon to people who encounter skimwalkers. Thanks for listening to these creepy and downright strange Skimwalker Encounter horror stories that'll freak you out tonight. If you're a fan of Skimwalker stories and want to hear a lot more of them, my channel has hundreds of stories just like these. So be sure to hit that like button and subscribe and turn on notifications so you don't miss a new episode. The more likes and subscriptions the channel gets, the more YouTube promotes us in the algorithm, and that helps us grow our ever-expanding waters. If you'd also like to help us out the extra mile, be sure to throw down a comment. It helps us a ton. I'd love to know what story was your favorite tonight. If you're on the go but don't have YouTube Premium and want to download and listen to your favorite Swamp Dweller scary stories no matter where you are, you can download them absolutely free from Spotify, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, and pretty much anywhere else you find your favorite podcast online. It's absolutely free and always will be. Thank you guys so much for supporting the Swamp the way you do. I appreciate it immensely and can't wait to share more scary stories with you from everybody here in the Swamp. As always, if you have a story that you would like to share, whether it's with a skimwalker or something else, be sure to submit yours at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I'm always looking for new stories. Be sure to join me over on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, Facebook, Instagram, all that good stuff, and I'll see you soon with another creepy episode.